The following review contains spoilers for the movie Venom, so if you haven't seen it,
get out.
That was terrible. This is the Vince Salerno Podcast, episode 35. On today's episode, we're discussing Apple's new streaming service and the new rules regarding that. Also, we're talking about Suicide Squad 2 hiring James Gunn to write and possibly direct, Scarlett Johansson's pay raise in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and I review Sony's latest attempt in a cinematic universe, Venom. So sit back and relax, because the Vince Salerno Podcast starts right now. Hey guys, welcome to the Vince Salerno Podcast, episode 35, on this Friday, October 12th, 2018. I'm your host, Vince Salerno. Again, sorry for a long break. It's been a crazy couple months, I think I've told you guys before. I have an internship. I'm living in LA now. My twin sister just got married, so I've been spending a lot of time home with family, catching up with family and friends. It's been a fun break away from things, but back to work. Again, I'm starting an internship with a company in the development room. Really excited, really fun stuff. It's early days, but career's getting off the ground. We'll see. But yeah, one thing, of course, that I want to keep going is the podcast. And sorry, it's been a long time. I know last episode, I talked about cinematography with Andrew Koltanouk. I wanted to do a little episode on the whole James Gunn Twitter Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 situation, and never got a chance to do that. Hopefully with one of these stories that I mentioned today, I will get a chance to at least touch on that briefly, and just my thoughts. And had a lot of time to think about it. Had some didn't know what to think for a while, but I've sort of solidified an opinion on this thing. But yeah, let's get right into it. A lot of great news stories that have come out over the past couple months. A lot of new stuff that come out just recently that I want to talk about. One of which, number one, is new details on Apple's streaming service that they're starting up. Streaming services are becoming a hot button thing, sort of the new trend of this decade, I think, and probably going forward for a long, long time. And a lot of studios, a lot of just really random companies are jumping in on this. Of course, you had Netflix as sort of start of the game. You have Amazon. You have now Disney doing their own thing. You have DC Comics doing the DC Universe streaming service. Even Facebook and Walmart. Those are two companies that I would just never in a million years would have think, you know who should start a streaming service? Walmart. It's just absolutely insane that all these companies are jumping in on this. Some companies that have, like I said, Walmart, that have no business being in the entertainment industry, yet here they are. So, of course, Apple has been trying to get theirs off the ground for a long time, and every now and then we'll hear about a project in development with a certain actor or director attached to it. I think there's one regarding Chris Evans, but we're getting some new details that the service will be pre-installed will be available on a pre-installed TV app on all Apple devices. So if you own an Apple device, you're already locked in. You're going to get this content for free. And as an Apple user, that's awesome. That's a great way to sort of pat your customers on the back, I guess. Just like, thanks for sticking around with us. Here's some free content. Hopefully it's good content, but there's that. So I think that is a great strategy for getting people in. And hopefully good word of mouth will say, hey, if you don't have Apple products, it's either you should get Apple products or it's worth paying for. I don't know if they're going to actually set up a payment system or if it's just going to be all for free and you have to buy Apple products to get it. But it's a great way to get people, I guess, to buy Apple phones, Apple laptops, any Apple device in order to get this streaming service. I think it's a great way to entice people to get in on the action if the content is worth it, which is yet to be seen. Let's see. The service will be available in pre-installed TV app on Apple devices such as iPhone, iPad, and Apple TV. Owners of these devices will be able to watch all Apple-owned content for free through this app. And they have the option of adding subscription channels, which includes VOD services such as HBO and Stars, which is kind of similar to what Amazon already does with, HBO and Stars. I think other details, I believe the content is going to stick to a PG rating. They want this content to be for all audiences, so ranging from kid to adult to family friendly to sort of like in between where anybody can watch it. And I think that's a great strategy. It's a great way to differentiate yourself from other services. You have Netflix that really pushes the boundaries of what can be shown on television because it's not on television. And then you have HBO that is on television and pushes the boundaries intentionally because that's their niche. That's what makes them different from other services. And that's what makes them different from other content providers. With this, we haven't really had a very kid-friendly, family-oriented streaming service that gears towards a wide variety of audiences where it's not too dark for kids, but it's not too light for adults. And I think if that's the direction Apple is going with their content, I think that can be really beneficial for them. It can really stand out from, obviously, HBO with the Game of Thrones and all the violence and nudity and all the promiscuous stuff that you don't want to see on a family-friendly streaming service. Let's see. What do we have on this service? I'm trying to pull up a list here. There's this show called Amazing Stories, which has Steven Spielberg on it. Let's see. Oh, there was that is still happening, but the showrunner was replaced because its show got too dark. There's going to be shows from Jennifer Aniston, Reese Witherspoon, Francis Lawrence, John M. Chu, and Damien Chazelle. They're lined up to make content for Apple. It remains to be seen what exactly. And again, I'm pretty sure there's a Chris Evans show or movie in development at Apple. Anyways, I try to keep a pulse on the industry as it's growing and changing. And one thing that I'm becoming very aware of is that streaming services are the future. And I mean, look at Jeffrey Katzenberg's new TV, which is set to come out Christmas of next year, which will be strictly for short-form content, and it'll be geared towards on-the-go stuff. And that, I think, is a great idea that can really, really take off. I mean, short films and short-form content, I don't think, is a hot-button topic, but if you're doing it on a high production quality, and they already have $1 billion to launch this freaking thing, they already need to make the content, and they need an additional $1 billion to launch the service itself, and they're already securing the funds already. So it looks like the new TV working title is well on its way to becoming a real thing that could change the industry for the better. And I don't think Apple's streaming service is going to change the industry for the better per se, but if they provide good content that is family friendly and not too dark or too light, it could be a good alternative for people who don't want to see super dark or super lighthearted Netflix content or HBO or Amazon or et cetera, et cetera. So we'll see what happens with Apple and its streaming service. All right, topic number two. Marvel has been developing a Black Widow solo film for what feels like years. I think we heard about it first after Avengers or Avengers Age of Ultron, and it wasn't a priority, which is questionable because it should have been, because Black Widow is one of the biggest characters in the MCU. I mean, she's a fantastic, well-developed character, and it really didn't show until, obviously, Joss Whedon took the reins of the cinematic universe with Avengers. But at the same time, her story, I think going forward, her story solo film needs to be set in the past. And I believe it is. We already got a director for this movie in the form of, oh my gosh, what's her name? It's some really inventive, not inventive name, but something Shortland. Oof, man. Yeah, Kate Shortland, who I'm not familiar with her work, but it's a female director, and I think that's kind of what you need to really make this movie work. I think a female's touch is going to make this movie succeed from other female superhero films, which I guess most of them have all been done by females, so never mind. but she's getting a pay raise, which is differing from her salary from previous Marvel movies. It seems like Chris Evans and Chris Hemsworth have always pulled about $15 million per movie. Starting from Civil War onward, the two of them have been paid a $15 million salary. And Scarlett Johansson has always been paid less. And with her upcoming solo film, she will be paid more for being in this movie. Which just brings to question, at least for me, the whole salary thing. I don't understand this weird bias in Hollywood that women have to be paid less than men. I don't understand that at all. Like, the whole thing with Matt Smith being paid more than Claire Foy, it's like, that's just dumb. That's just so dumb. If Matt Smith was a star of that show and Claire Foy was a supporting role, I could understand, but the fact that Claire Foy is the lead of The Crown and Matt Smith is the supporting lead of The Crown and it's not the other way, that's just blows my mind. Absolutely blows my mind. And I don't understand why Black Widow, Scarlett Johansson, hasn't been paid the same or given the same amount of respect that the Chrises, Mark Ruffalo, Robert Downey Jr., deserve in terms of salary. It's like she is one of the main six at this point. The MCU is like our generation's Star Wars, where, you know, you had the original three heroes, Han, Luke, and Leia. We have the original six Avengers: Iron Man, Captain America, Thor, Hulk, Black Widow, and Hawkeye. She's part of this like new trio that is of the same caliber as the original Star Wars trilogy characters. So she should be held in that regard, I think, as should all the characters of that original six. So the fact that it's been taking this long to give her a pay raise like this is weird, is really weird. But we don't know a lot about the Black Widow movie, only that it'll be taking place in the past, years before Iron Man 2, before she comes into prominence. And I'm excited for it. I think, depending on what happens in Infinity War, I don't know if she'll die, if she'll live on, but I think now that we're sort of saying goodbye to the old era of heroes and ushering in new ones, it's a great time to revisit the past and revisit characters that need their own solo films. So, like, Black Widow is getting her movie. Loki is getting a Disney streaming service TV limited series. Same with Scarlet Witch. And I think we should give Hawkeye that same opportunity as well, whether it's a miniseries or a movie, or if Hawkeye is in Black Widow's movie and it becomes sort of a solo movie for both of them, that'd be cool too. But yeah, I just wanted to touch on that briefly. Obviously, she's going to star in Avengers 4 come next year, and a lot of stuff's ramping up. We obviously saw a leaked image of Thor and Rocket in matching Avengers suits, which is questionable. I'm so excited for Avengers 4. It's like it's in my top three of the most anticipated movies of next year. Unfortunately, it's not the first like it was with Infinity War. That is reserved for Toy Story 4, which I cannot wait to see. I think I'm going to get emotional watching that movie. Just watching the trailer, I'm going to get emotional at. But anyways, we'll talk about Toy Story 4 another day. I cannot wait for that day. All right, topic number three. We are talking about James Gunn. So This guy has been in the news for the past, what, 3-4 months? He, of course, the director of the very first Guardians of the Galaxy, the second Guardians of the Galaxy, and had a significant impact on Avengers Infinity War, helping the Russo brothers usher the Guardians into the Avengers world, and crossing those two teams over to great results. Great results. Of course, he was fired in July. Yeah, July of 2018, this year, for some resurfaced tweets on Twitter regarding really insensitive jokes on pedophilia, on a lot of on just a lot of uncomfortable topics. And I'll just touch as briefly as I can. I'll touch on my thoughts on that whole thing. The fact that these tweets were 11, 12 years old, it kind of scares me in terms of the culture that we're veering towards, where you can be fired or your life ruined by some stupid stuff that you said 11, 12, 20 years, 20, 30 years ago. It's kind of ridiculous. Now, James Gunn said some very stupid stuff. Very insensitive, very... I was baffled by reading the tweets. I just could not believe that he said these things. And what's clear to me is that he has changed. He's not the same guy, so we can assume. But I think it's unfortunate that we live in an age where you can be judged by tweets that happened 20, 30 years ago. And I don't think he deserved to be fired, but at the same time, Disney is a company that has been ushering in a new standard for sexual harassment, the way you treat people, the way you, things you say, the way you present yourself, and they are not making any exceptions. They did it with Roseanne, which may or may not been well-deserved. Right now, they're kicking themselves for firing her off of their new Roseanne revival, which is just hilarious to me. They didn't make an exception for Roseanne. They didn't make an exception with James Gunn. And so I applaud Disney for not being biased in terms of, not to get political, but in terms of conservatives versus liberal, because let's be honest, James Gunn is a liberal and Roseanne is a conservative. And they're not holding any bias. They are, regardless of political affiliation, if you say something stupid online, you will be fired. So with that, I applaud Disney for staying consistent and not tolerating that behavior, no matter who it is. But at the same time, I don't believe both of these people deserve to be fired to the degree that they were. It's kind of, it's sad. It really is sad to see people like Roseanne and James Gunn, two talented people, be fired for stupid things they said years ago, or I guess Roseanne was more recent, but it's Twitter. We all say stupid stuff on Twitter, on Facebook, or whatever. I don't think it should reflect our the way we work, the way we carry ourselves, but at the same time, it is important. So maybe it's just the times are changing and I have to adjust to that. That's fine. But regardless, I don't think any of these two deserve to be fired for the things they said. Now, that being said, people have been furious about James Gunn being fired by Disney and thus not being able to direct Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. He wrote the script, and they're going to use his script, but there's been a lot of pushback from some of the cast members. A lot of them don't condone his actions, but they support him as a person and want him back. It's not going to happen. At this point, James Gunn is not coming back to direct Guardians of the Galaxy 3, as much as we want him to. But it's gotten so bad to the point where Dave Bautista is thinking about even leaving the franchise because he doesn't want to work with whoever they get. He doesn't want to work with Disney. And I can understand that. But that's another story altogether. But Anyways, so people have been speculating, well, maybe James Gunn can get picked up by another studio and do another big comic book adaptation. And, well, this week that happened. So, here we have our story. James Gunn is going to write and possibly direct Suicide Squad 2. Never in a million years would I think that that would actually be a sentence I would read. I know people always thought that, oh, James Gunn should direct a Suicide Squad movie or whatever, but it's like, now, are you just saying that because Suicide Squad is a clear ripoff of Guardians of the Galaxy, or are you saying that because you could actually, you know, provide clarity and a good narrative for an already terrible movie? Because Suicide Squad is, albeit one of the more fun DC movies, but a terrible movie, just one of the worst I've seen. And the thing that really, I mean, I love James Gunn, I love all his, most of his movies, especially the Guardians films, and I want to see him get more work. But the thing that really bugs me about this is they already had a director. They already had a director in Gavin O'Connor. Sorry, Justin. Now, I get it. James Gunn is an attractive, hot name right now, and you want to get good, talented people who are in the public eye to make your movies. But Gavin O'Connor is a well-accomplished director. He's made some great movies for Warner Brothers, worked well with Ben Affleck. I thought he was a great choice for Guardians of the Galaxy. Suicide Squad 2. I was excited. I was like, okay, give this guy a chance to make a high-budget blockbuster superhero film. And it feels like it's in his wheelhouse. I thought it was a match made in heaven. Great. And then I find out that he was replaced by James Gunn because... Now, here's a story. Here's what they say. He turned in a draft that was very similar to Birds of Prey, which is ramping up production. And they chose to go with Birds of Prey instead of Suicide Squad 2, and then that resulted in Gavin O'Connor leaving the project, quote-unquote leaving the project, and studio favoring James Gunn. I don't know if they fired him as a result of James Gunn, or if that is the case, the story of him turning in a draft similar to... or maybe they were already in talks with James Gunn, and then once they realized that he was writing a draft similar that O'Connor was writing a draft similar to Birds of Prey, they gave him the boot, and then he went off to do bigger and better things. I just don't like that. That just doesn't sit well with me. I think Warner Brothers is so desperate to win back their audience because they effed up so miraculously. I'm kind of done with the DC Universe. Once we get an official word on whether Henry Cavill is back as Superman, if he's not, I'm done. I'm sick and tired of getting my hopes up for these movies. I think Ben Affleck is the best Batman we've ever had, and they treated him like shit. Sorry, I'm still trying not to curse, but I'm just really angry about this subject. They've treated Henry Cavill's Superman like crap. They won't even give him a movie. They'll give a sequel. They offered him a stupid bit cameo in Shazam when you can't even give Superman, the greatest superhero of all time and one of the most profitable superheroes of all time, his own sequel. They're Warner Brothers is not listening to their audiences. People don't want to see this stupid Birds of Prey. They don't want to see a stupid Harley Quinn spinoff. They don't want to see a stupid Jared Leto Joker spinoff. They don't want to see all these stupid villains and hero spinoffs that they keep pitching. We want to see Batman. We want to see Superman. We want to see Wonder Woman. We want to see The Flash. We want to see Cyborg. We want to see the Green Lanterns. Where the hell is the Green Lantern Corps? I've been dying to see that movie for years. When they announced it, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. It's like a buddy cop space movie. Bring it on! And it's not here. It's been years since they announced it, and it's not here. It just pisses me off what DC is doing, and they have no idea what they're doing. I'll give them credit. They seem like they're course-correcting with Suicide Squad, with Aquaman, Wonder Woman, Shazam. at least Shazam and Aquaman look good. I hate all the trailers for Aquaman, I'll be honest, but I think it's going to be a good movie. And Shazam looks fun, too. Wonder Woman's probably going to be great because it's Patty Jenkins and it's the same formula as before. And it's all set in the 80s. So, 80s, man, come on. You can't trick me with the 80s. It has to be good. If not, I'm going to punch something in the face. I just am so upset with DC and how they've treated their mainstay characters and how they're trying to do this these off-world movies where the Batman movie is not set in the DCU. It might not feature Ben Affleck as Batman, which I hope to God it does. And they might lose Superman. It's just, they have no idea what they're doing. And I'm so upset with what they have planned. Or what they are supposedly planning. They have no idea what they're doing. And so I'm gonna sit in the sidelines. I'll watch the movies. I'm not going to be invested in the lore or anything like that, like I am with Marvel. But I'll be there. I'll watch the movies, but not optimistically. anyways, I'm getting off topic, but Suicide Squad 2. So I'm a little pissed about the way they've treated Gavin O'Connor in this whole thing. It seems like they've sort of pushed him aside, like, oh, thanks for everything, but no thanks. We're going to go with the more bigger, more attractive name of James Gunn. And it's like, that's upsetting, so whatever. But James Gunn might be, on the optimistic side, if he's writing Suicide Squad 2, he has a chance to course correct the crap of the first movie, because it was a terrible movie. And I think James Gunn is a phenomenal writer and a phenomenal director. And I think he can really pull this thing together. So that's an exciting addition to the DC universe. And kind of an FU to Marvel, in all honesty. bring another Marvel director into DC. A Marvel director into DC. That's just hilarious. So I think it's good, and I think James Gunn will do a great job, and if he does direct it, we could get a really good, true-to-form Suicide Squad movie. There's a lot of elements that I liked about the first one that I hope he carries into this next one, because there's also some conflicting reports that it could be either a direct sequel or a loose reboot, which I don't want to see. I do not want to see another reboot in this universe. Just please keep your cast, kill off some characters if you have to, but use what you have and adjust. I don't want to see another reboot in this universe. I don't want them to hit the reset button. I just want to see... Because Will Smith, Margot Robbie, Jai Courtney is as much of a bit role he was. There's some great characters in the Suicide Squad, and I want to see them pull through. And I think the dynamic between Rick Flagg and Deadshot was the best part of the whole movie. And that was something that, like, stuck with me as being really well done. And their motivations... Well, it was great. I want to see that dynamic play out again. And I hope that James Gunn can see the value of the bits in Suicide Squad and pull them into the sequel, and not completely dismantling that first movie and doing something new. But I do want to see what he does. So as angry as I am with DC and what they're doing, and as angry as I am with how they've treated Gavin O'Connor in this whole situation, I am excited to see what James Gunn does with Suicide Squad in the DC universe, and I'm glad he's gotten work. No one doubted he was not going to get work, but I'm glad he's got work and that he's on his way to doing some good stuff. So, yeah, hopefully we get a good DC movie out of James Gunn. And if not, then this thing needs to die. All right, so that was our top three. Again, that was new details on Apple streaming service, Scarlett Johansson's pay raise in the Black Widow movie, and James Gunn will write and direct Suicide Squad 2. Well, in talks to write and direct Suicide Squad 2. All right. So now we're on to our topic of the week, which is a review. And today I'm reviewing Sony's latest attempt at a Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Venom.
That was terrible. So I just saw Venom last night, And first, let me preface this all by saying, of course, most of you know who watch my podcast, follow my YouTube stuff. I'm a huge, huge Marvel nut. I love Marvel comics, Marvel superheroes, Marvel villains. I've been in love with the movies and the cinematic universes, and I always hold out hope for a studio that has another Marvel property to try and make their own cinematic universe and crossover with other heroes and villains. It's an exciting time with the cinematic universes, but most of them have failed epically. Specifically, Sony's Spider-Man universe. As we know, they started off trying to do a reboot with The Amazing Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man 2, which was trying to set up a lot of crossovers and spinoffs and continued sequels with Spider-Man. One of many was a Venom movie. So when Amazing Spider-Man 2 came out, that was sort of like the breaking out of the cinematic universe. They'd set up the Sinister Six. There was talks about a Venom movie. There was talk about a all-female Spider-Man team movie with like Silk and Spider-Gwen and all these other Spider-Man villains, or Spider-Man superheroes and villains connected to Spider-Man. I think Black Cat was one of them too. And Sony really wanted to do this, and they wanted to do a Sinister Six movie as well, and it didn't work out because Amazing Spider-Man 2 was kind of a dumpster fire of a movie. Not terrible, but definitely not great either. And Sony obviously decided to, out of desperation, sell the rights partially to Marvel and let them make the good movie of Spider-Man. But there were limitations, obviously. Spider-Man could only be featured in these movies with Sony's consent. They couldn't use certain villains. Spider-Man was also could only appear in Avengers movies and Spider-Man solo films. I don't think anything outside of that. But then Sony was also trying to still make their own universe, and which is may or may not be set in the MCU, and they wanted to start that off with Venom. They announced Venom, they announced a Black Cat and Silver Sable movie, and since then they've announced a Morbius the Living Vampire movie, and they've announced a Kraven the Hunter movie, and probably many more in the works, including a Venom 2 now. So starting off with this whole Venom thing, I remember exactly what I was doing when they announced that Venom was a go. I was actually doing laundry when I was living in San Diego, and I got a notification from Collider with an article saying that Venom is a go with Tom Hardy starring in it and Ruben Fleischer directing. And I got excited. I love Tom Hardy. I think he's one of the best actors working today. Ruben Fleischer, obviously a decent director, has directed some okay movies and directed some great movies like Zombieland. So I was optimistic, like, this could be really, really good. And also I heard that Tom Hardy was so interested that he was also producing this movie, which just, again, was like, whoa, he's really got his hands in this movie. It sounds great. And as, I don't know if I mentioned this in my podcast or not, but when the first trailer came out, I hated it because we didn't see Venom. There was no way of knowing that movie was going to be about Venom, except for the little graphics at the end. But that was it. It could have easily been a Jason Bourne reboot with Tom Hardy starring in the role. Stupid shoes, get out of the way. It could have easily been a Jason Bourne reboot with Tom Hardy starring as Jason Bourne. That's what it looked like to me without all the Venom stuff. But then we got a second trailer, then we saw Venom, and it was clear that, okay, Venom's in this movie a lot. And that first trailer must have just been them still working on the effects, but wanted to get word out that Venom is happening. Weird way of doing it, but I guess it worked. And so as more and more stuff went on, I heard rumblings that, oh, this movie's, people are trying to hide this movie, it's not good, it's gonna suck, and I never got that. I was like, this looks good. It doesn't look like a truthful adaptation of Venom per se, but, you know, without Spider-Man, it's never gonna be that, so I took what I saw, and I thought, this isn't bad. This is, looks, it's going to be fun. And that's kind of what I got going out of it last night. It's, I mean, believe what people say. It's a mess. But it's not as big of a mess as people are making it out to be. I don't think it's bad. I didn't want to shoot myself in the head watching this movie. It wasn't The Room bad. It wasn't bad. It was like a half-baked movie that just needed like 30 more minutes of baking in the oven before we popped it out and we actually got a good movie. Sorry, the best way I can describe it. Let me start out with the thing that I liked about Venom. First off, Tom Hardy. As I said, he's one of my favorite actors, and seeing him in this role was so much fun. He's funny at times. He's kind of this wannabe cool, pathetic loser of a dude, which kind of, I guess, is supposed to mesh with Venom's personality as well, since he's kind of an outcast, I guess. But and Tom Hardy has a lot of fun with this. You can tell he's really trying to do something different with the role that he hasn't done before in any movie. I can't think of a performance like this of his that matches or exceeds anything he's done before. Like, this was out of the box Tom Hardy. It was crazy. It was crazy at times. It was funny at times. It was dark and brooding and just questionable. But I had so much fun watching him. And the interplay with him and Venom was so great. It's this weird Jekyll and Hyde dynamic that works really well. And I think that's partly because Tom Hardy's such a genius actor who clearly put a lot of thought into the relationship between Venom and Eddie Brock, because he plays both. He voices both Venom and Eddie. Obviously, voicing Eddie. He plays Eddie, voices Venom, of course. And I think that definitely helps with the dynamic that the two of them have. It's a very strong, sometimes humorous, buddy comedy type dynamic, with Venom being this monstrous alien symbiote that wants to eat people, and Eddie sort of being the guy who's like, no, we can't do that. So that dynamic was great. I loved it all. The action was fun. It was a lot of fun. I loved the motorcycle chase. A lot of the actions, they weren't phenomenal. Didn't exceed anything I had seen before, but they were good. I had fun watching the action scenes, and it was clear what was going on in each scene. It was shot really well. The effects, there's probably one or two scenes where the effects really suffer, and you can tell, oh, that's fake. That's like early 2000s fake. That's just, ugh. But everything else is just great. Like, anytime Venom is Venom, he looks fantastic on screen. I was so happy with his look. I like the big, sort of bulky, almost Hulk-sized Venom that we see in the comics. I'm not a huge fan of the skinny human, scrawny dude-looking human version of Venom. I'd rather have my big, monstrous Venom. So seeing his look was great. I love that. Couple of the actors outside of Tom Hardy were good. I think Jenny Slate, despite being a mostly comedic actress, she played a really good performance as one of the doctors that, or the doctor that gets Tom or Eddie Brock into the Life Foundation to expose the symbiotes and what he's doing and killing the homeless or innocent people. Another thing that I thought that was really interesting was that there was a movie that came out called Life, and it was all about how there was, like, this alien killing people on the spaceship. It was, like, Ryan Reynolds and Jake Gyllenhaal, and the movie's called Life, and the spaceship that crashes in the beginning has the word life on it. So I couldn't help but think, are they connected? I don't know how that movie ends. I haven't seen it, but I know people were saying, like, wow, this could be like a prequel to Venom. And it honestly, knowing that, I wish it was. That would have been really fun. Would have been a good little payoff for those who had seen the movie Life, but it may have ended in a much different way, so I don't know. The humor surprisingly works well. There's some bits that I think are unintentionally funny, and then there's some bits that I think are actually supposed to be funny. Sometimes it's hard to tell, but for the most part, I had fun with it. I thought that it all worked for the most part. There's one bit, though, that I couldn't tell if it was supposed to be intentionally funny or not, but when Venom first says, Eddie, and then Tom Hardy just, like, jolts back, like, woo! He screams like a girl, jumps back, hits his head on the bathroom tiles, and passes out. And I was laughing for a good 30 seconds, because it just came out of nowhere. I was like, what the heck? So I couldn't tell if that was supposed to be intentional or not, but it was a funny moment nonetheless. So, as I said, there's some good parts in this movie, mostly when you see Venom and Eddie together, but it's a flawed movie, so I'm going to go into the bad. Michelle Williams isn't terrible, but she's fine. They didn't give her much to do. She's a very cliche romantic interest. The dynamic of her being a ex-fiance was interesting, and how that, you know, sets him on the path to try to win her back. So we'll see about that. I did enjoy seeing her beat Don the Venom symbiote for a second and becoming She-Venom. That was kind of cool. And I guess the scene where she's making out with him as Venom was kind of entertaining and funny. Somebody told me that it kind of technically is like a threesome between Venom, Eddie, and Anne, I guess her name is. And now I can't get that visual out of my head. So whoever you are who said that, thank you so much. So much for that visual. But yeah, she's kind of bumbles around. Like, she's this overly competent woman who can take care of herself. I heard interviews with her that she was, like, trying to make this woman reflect the Me Too movement. And I don't really care if you reflect the Me Too movement or not. But it was almost, like, too on the nose. Like, I can do things. Look, I pressed the button. Look at me. I'm a Me Too girl. I'm standing up. Time's up. Whatever. It's like, just be a character. I don't care if you reflect the time. Just be a good character. I didn't understand their logic for making her character like that. I think there was the line wasn't in the movie, but I maybe it was, but there's supposed to be this line where she's like, I love you, Eddie, but I love me more. And I don't remember that line being in the movie, but I'm glad it wasn't, because hearing that in an interview, I'm just like, that's a terrible line. Just super on the nose about the whole Me Too movement. Again, it's just, her character was fine. Flawed. Not really serving much of a purpose, but fine. Now, Riz Ahmed, on the other hand, I didn't like him completely. I think his motivations were believable, that he's this big picture guy who wants to save the world and thinks the Earth is on the brink of extinction or whatever, and he wants to find an alternative to save humanity at the expense of humanity by killing innocent people to save millions and billions. And when he's researching the symbiote, he discovers that, you know, maybe the way to save us is for us to combine with the symbiotes and we can live in space. So, I mean, people don't like that, but it checks out with me. I'm fine with his motivation. The way he plays it, though, it's just very bland. I didn't think he was brought much to the role. And this is Riz Ahmed. He's a phenomenal actor, of course. But he played it very bland-like and one-noted. It wasn't an interesting performance at all. One thing I noticed about his character, he's very manipulative. Throughout the entire movie, he's finding ways to manipulate people into doing what he wants and sort of pitching himself as the good guy, even though he's doing bad things. And I kind of appreciated that bit of development. Like, that definitely showed in his performance, but that was it. Like, he's a really forgettable villain, to be honest. And it's a shame because it's Riz Ahmed. And he becomes really interesting when he combines with Riot, which, you know, Riot was great. It's like, and even though he's only in the movie for like a good 10, 20 minutes, his motivations are a lot more exciting, I guess. He wants to go back to space and bring back all his symbiote friends and bring them back to feast on Earth. And Venom doesn't want to, and he's kind of, in order for him and Eddie to live on as they are, and him wanting to stick around, he's got to kill Riot. So all that checks out, I guess. I know, overall, Riz Ahmed was just kind of bland. Again, his motivations checked out for me, but overall, he was just bland. The writing is a bit off. There are some scenes that are just bafflingly bad and weird, and then there's some bits of dialogue that are just okay. Some stuff just doesn't work out or doesn't work. It doesn't make any sense. Like, Eddie and Venom are talking before they're about to face off Riot, and he says, like, I'm gonna stick around. And he's like, oh, okay, what changed your mind? He's like, you did, Eddie. You were the one that made me want to stick around. So, yeah. It's like, okay, why did Eddie make you want to stick around? Like, what about that dynamic? Was it because you're both losers? Because that wasn't made super clear. I mean, I know they're both kind of losers, but Venom's like, yeah, I'm kind of a loser, so now we're similar, I guess. It's like, not really. Venom's kind of a cool punk rock badass, and Eddie's kind of a loser. A loser who sort of creates his own, he creates his own misfortune, really. And so, I don't know, Venom's like that back on his own planet, but that wasn't made clear. So, although, again, I like the dynamic between the two of them, it just wasn't made clear in that bit of dialogue. It's like, oh, how are you guys so alike? It's just weird. And then, again, the writing of Michelle Williams' character was just bad, just pointless. I think you could have taken her out of the movie and you could have replaced her with anybody, really. You could have cast a nobody in there. The role still would have been the same. So, hopefully in sequels, she'll become a more well-developed character, if she even sticks around, I don't know. the great thing about this movie is that it's very refined in what it's about. It's not about setting up a big universe. It's not about, superheroes and effects and all that stuff. It's about the relationship between Eddie and Venom, and that's what makes this movie not a dumpster fire. It really saves it. I mean, it's half-baked, I think, is the best way to describe it, but it's that relationship and that the fun and sometimes the scariness of that relationship that really entertains. Like, I was slightly entertained by the first act, but once Venom is introduced, it's like non-stop fun. I had so much fun watching those two play off each other, and that's the saving grace of the movie. Otherwise, I think we'd have a pretty terrible movie. And I think it's a good enough movie to start off this cinematic universe. I'm really glad that they've already greenlit a sequel and that they got these other spinoffs in the works too. It's a good movie. It really is a good movie. I don't have a problem with a lot of it being like, you know, people are coming like, oh, it's kind of like a step backwards in terms of it being sort of feeling like the 90s and 90s superheroes like Daredevil and Spider-Man and X-Men and Blade. And it's like, honestly, I didn't mind that either. If anything, it was a breath of fresh air. Because I think superhero films are starting to become a little, even especially the MCU films, as much as I love them, they're starting to feel very similar in tone and style and the way they're shot. It's like they're all sort of shot in the same way, and it's kind of boring. I mean, the only thing that really makes those films really interesting is the characters. So having Venom take a completely different approach from what the Marvel Cinematic Universe has done, because the MCU would never, Kevin Feige would never do anything like this. They would not have the balls to do this. Maybe they do now, since Venom's obviously successful. It was really refreshing to see a old fashioned take on the superhero genre. And although it did feel like a 90s superhero film, it still felt like it was taking place now. And I grew up on that genre, or that style of superhero film, so I loved it. I thought it was great. It was really refreshing and really fun. So I guess overall, it is a messy movie. It's a very messy movie, and I'm interested to see what this director's cut that's coming out is going to look like, if it at all improves on the movie or not. But one thing is for certain, that I had a unquestionable amount of fun watching this film. It's funny, it's weird, it's this weird monster movie that I just couldn't get enough of. Like, I could have had another 10 minutes of Venom and Eddie riffing off each other, or just Venom. Like, I honestly wish there was more conversations with just Venom. That's how much I love that dynamic and that character. So, and as a big fan of Spider-Man and his villains, I'm not a huge Venom fan. I haven't read all the comics. He's probably like one of my top three favorite Spider-Man villains, my favorite being Dr. Octopus. But it's fun. He's a fun character. It's a fun movie. It's a fun dynamic. It's a fun, interesting premise. And they did a great job at setting up the expanding universe without really setting it up in it at all. And let's talk about the post-credits scene before we go. So obviously there's a post-credits scene where Eddie and Venom go to a jail, and they visit Carnage, or the guy who becomes Carnage. He's this criminal named Cletus Cassidy, played by Woody Harrelson. Yeah, that's right. Woody Harrelson was in this movie. Remember when he was cast in this movie, and people were like, oh, who is he going to play? I don't know. Well, he was only in the movie for like a minute, but he is playing Carnage, or he's set up to play Carnage in future films. And I'm so glad this movie is successful, because I totally bought into the performance of Woody Harrelson as Carnage, or Cletus Cassidy. And I mean, of course, he's wearing a wig, and they can improve on that later on. But he was unsettling, and I was like, oh, you got Eddie Brock and Venom going up against Cassidy and Carnage. It's just like, ah, I want to see this. I want to see this. It's going to be fun. It'll be a really cool riff off between these two symbiotes and two hosts. And I got excited. I got really excited when I saw that post-credits scene. And so, again, they set up a universe without really setting up a universe. They set up the next Venom movie, but they didn't really tease like Morbius or Kraven or Black Cat or anything like that. But I'm sure there'll be a time when we'll find out like what the big crossover plans are for these characters. But Sony's Marvel Spider-Man villain universe is off to a good start, and I cannot wait to see where it goes. Also, I forgot, I'm going to talk about the brief little Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse clip that we got at the end. It was, it starts out with, like, meanwhile in another universe, and we see this whole scene of Miles Morales taking on the Prowler in New York, and then this next part really confused me, because he visits the grave of Peter Parker, but then Peter Parker's alive, so I think it's, if I remember the trailers correctly, this is the universe where Peter Parker was Spider-Man, but he died, and Miles Morales takes on the role. But now, this Peter Parker in the movie that we see in the trailers is a Peter Parker that comes from a dimension that where he's still alive. And maybe Miles Morales doesn't exist, or he does exist but doesn't become Spider-Man, something like that. So, it was a cool clip, and then we see he accidentally like knocks out Peter Parker, and he has to sort of thwip him across New York in the most non-inconspicuous way possible. It was really funny. The animation style, seeing the animation style on the big screen too was jarring, a little different, but I got used to it really quickly and enjoyed it immensely. So the credits were so long. Like, I heard this scene was in there and I waited like more than 7 minutes for this thing. It was ridiculous. But once the credits did end and we got to the scene, I was like, okay, that was definitely worth the wait. It was a long wait. So if you're going into the after credits, get ready to wait a long time. But yeah, it did a good job of introducing that movie. And I think Tom Hardy is supposed to voice cameo as Venom in that movie. So it's a good thing that movie was successful, because we'll want to see another version of him in the universe. So yeah, I guess, again, overall, it's a flawed movie, Venom, but had a lot of fun. And I can't wait to see what they do with the character going forward. And hopefully one day we get a crossover with Spider-Man, whether it's in the MCU or if they have to reboot Spider-Man again. Don't want that to happen, but whatever. We'll see what happens. Okay, well, that's our show today. If you guys liked or disliked Venom, be sure to let me know in the comments. I'd love to hear you guys' thoughts. Next time, I don't know what I'm going to do next time, but yeah, the podcast is still up and running. Can't wait to keep doing more episodes and talking about movies and stuff like that. I'm going to try to get J.J. Schindler and Shelby Turner back in again, and we'll talk about the horror film we made. It's called working title is Monster in the Locker Room. It was my first time producing something by myself. J.J. directed, Shelby produced and starred. It was a very difficult challenge for me, but a welcome challenge. I enjoyed it immensely, and really can't wait to get this movie finished. We're still in post-production right now, but I think it's going to be really good when we finish. It's already gotten a lot of positive responses from people we've shown it to, so I can't wait to finish it off and see what we what the other audiences' responses are once it's polished. So we'll probably talk about that eventually, hopefully before the end of 2018. All right, well, thank you all for watching this episode of the Vince Salerno Podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. If you did, give it a like, comment your thoughts, give it a share, if you're on Apple Podcasts, be sure to give this a rating. It really helps to get me out there and stuff. And of course, if you're not subscribed to my YouTube channel, go ahead and subscribe to my YouTube channel. I'm just look up the Vince Salerno - the Bigby 75. You should find me. I do trailer reactions. I do movie reviews. I'll do occasionally some special topics on certain things that I may not want to cover in the podcast. But yeah, still working on some short films I have coming out again with the one I'm producing and a couple others that I directed over the past couple months. So look out for all sorts of new, exciting content, new and exciting content. Okay, it's a sign that I need to get lunch. Okay, well, thank you all for watching. Thank you all for listening. Have a great rest of your day. God bless, and peace out.